TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
NFL is back.
All the time. A division of Bell Media. TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those listening to us at www.tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The afternoon after the night before. Ezra Ginsberg, good afternoon and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Good afternoon, happy St. Patrick's Day. It sounded like you were about to say it was like that movie, The Day After Tomorrow.
Well, if it was, yeah, I mean, that was sort of what I was referencing a little bit there. But anyways, happy St. Patrick's Day. Very nice of you to dye your entire scalp green today in honor of St. Patrick's Day. That's good. That's good loyalty to the Irish.
I have a little bit of Irish blood, so why not dye my hair green? I don't know if I needed to dye my eyebrows green.
That was a little bit different.
But you want your eyebrows to match your hair.
Usually.
Because the thing is, whenever you see someone with dyed blonde hair and then they don't have the dyed eyebrows, it's a giveaway. They're not a natural blonde.
That's very true.
So
that's very true.
I wanted to go all green. I think I'm looking good. But, you know, one day after arguably the loudest and biggest game of the year at the MTS Center, The entire city, I think, is on a massive high, not to mention the fact it's plus 20 out right now.
Absolutely. It was a chaotic scene last night at MTS Center, and we'll get into that in great detail. Our colleague Richard Pollock, who normally joins us, is on his way here. He'll be here momentarily. And let's throw it out now to the MTS Iceplex, where our good friend Andrew Hustler Patterson is there for the Tim Hortons Timbit Jamboree. Hustler, good afternoon. How are you, bud?
I am doing very well. Ezzy, nice to see you get into the spirit of the day. And I tell you what, there's a lot of hockey spirit here at the MTS Iceplex today. 97 Timbit teams, 5 and 6-year-old kids as part of the Timbit hockey program here, finishing up a wonderful season. And obviously the Jets have just been on the ice. It is this is one of those days that is really what the entire sport is all about. And we're going to be talking to some of the coaches, some of the young players, some of the people from Tim Hortons that make this amazing program go throughout the afternoon as we're cutting in on a legal curve and probably talking a little bit about the Winnipeg Jets as well, I'd imagine.
I suspect so. Huss, we'll speak to you again in about another 25, 30 minutes or so. Have a good one out there, bud.
Looking forward to it, guys. Keep up the great work on IC.
Talk to you in a bit.
Andrew Hustler Patterson from the Hustler and Lawless program at the Tim Hortons Hockey Jamboree at the MTS Iceplex. The Jets are practicing there. They put on a performance last night at MTS Center. The crowd was fantastic. The atmosphere was through the roof, and the Jets managed to get, I can't overstate it enough how important those 2 points were for the Winnipeg Jets last night.
Drew, it's unquestionable. If the Jets don't beat the Capitals yesterday, they're essentially out of the playoff race. And I'm just as much of an optimist as anyone out there. You know that I optimistically predicted the Jets would make the playoffs, and it's still a long, long ways away. They've got road games coming up that they're going to have to take advantage of. But if they don't win that game, they're essentially out of it. You go down 6 points.
Well, seven. Let's be honest.
With the regulation wins?
Right. The first tiebreaker. The first tiebreaker is regulation victories.
Right.
And the Jets trail the Capitals by a significant margin in regulation.
Four. Now.
Right. So they're not going to make that up. So they have to be.
No.
They have to cleanly be ahead of the Washington Capitals, which means they have to have 1 point more than them. Right now, they're only 2 points behind them in the actual standings, but let's be honest, it's 3 points. They're 3 points behind the Washington Capitals, and last night, if they didn't win, it was game over if they didn't win last night.
It's funny, Drew, you could even say that it was a 5-point game in the sense that it's a 4-point game, but the regulation win really makes it a 5-point game. And yeah, they needed to win that game in regulation. I mean, the Capitals tied it up there, and it looked like Antropov's goal might hold up, but that Byfuglien goal, I mean, that game felt more like a playoff game than any game. And the Jets have been, you know, on the brink of a playoff spot for a while now. They were holding it after that homestand, and then after they went into Calgary and Vancouver and lost, they fell as much as 6 points back, seven, if you include that regulation win.
Right.
But, you know, that game was really exciting. The first period, I actually thought that the Capitals played a better game and really controlled the puck down low on Winnipeg. And, you know, that Capitals team, the way they were playing in that first period, there's a reason why, you know, everyone was predicting that this is going to be the year that they're finally going to win the Stanley Cup. And at the very least, you know, finish as a top seed in the East.
Right.
But in the second period, the Jets got more scoring chances.
They hit three posts in that second period?
They were hitting posts. And, you know, Antropov got, I thought, a really nice goal. And
you know, it was a terrific goal, but yeah. It was the degree of difficulty on that goal was so high. He had Alex Ovechkin was draped all over his shoulder, and Antropov was still able to muscle his way into a scoring opportunity and put it over Thomas Vokoun.
And also, Drew, about that goal, Nikolai Antropov is a left-handed shot, and I know Richie loves this because it is important, and I know that Richie wants to get into something about the Jets' power play, the 5-on-3 that they didn't capitalize on, and that resulted in Matthew Perreault's early third period goal.
Right.
I know Richie has something to
We have 3 hours, so we'll definitely be hitting on that.
On the topic, though, quickly of Antropov on the second Jets goal, where he had Alexander Ovechkin on him, he's a left-handed shot, and Tim Stapleton saw him, and he actually tipped it backhanded, Antropov.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually switched to his backhand and tipped it up over Vokoun. So it really showed, I mean, he's a skill player. He was a high draft pick, and you know, he's got skill. He might not be as fast as he once was. Really, he's never been the fastest or the most fleet of foot, but it was a skilled goal. And, you know, I thought that line played really well. And they got the goal when they needed to, that being Bufflin on the 4-on-4. You know, he beat off Carl Alzner there. Beat him to the puck. And, you know, it was a very impressive game. They needed to come out and take the 2 points and win in regulation. They found a way to get it done. It wasn't the prettiest game, and they had to hold on right at the end there as Richie P. comes in.
Thank you. Nice of you to join us this morning, Richard.
Sorry, Drew.
And it was, all in all, a very impressive performance and a game they have to win. Now, I look ahead to next Friday's game.
Well,
in
they got to do it all over again next Friday.
As the game that'll probably determine if they're going to make it. They have one game left here at home, and then they've got to get it done on the road. There's nothing else to say.
One game on this homestand tomorrow night, right, against the Carolina Hurricanes.
No Jeff Skinner.
I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes are a team that, I mean, you have to dominate that game. And there is some fear, I mean, you know, that you may not have the same. I mean, they got so geared up for the Washington game, there's some fear there might be a letdown. But, you know, that's Coach Noel's responsibility, and the leaders in that dressing room have to be responsible for telling the team, look, this is a weakened opponent we're playing tomorrow. We have to just take care of them quickly and early and make it easy on themselves. Then they go on the road, and then it's next Friday in Washington where the rematch.
Not again, you know, the next game of the year, quote unquote. But there's games of the, you know, every game is a game of the year, and Buffalo's in between, and we can, you know, tied with them right now.
Yeah,
doesn't have the tiebreaker, but
Buffalo's right, still right in there. Yeah, and we're going to be joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News coming up at about 12:30 this afternoon.
And you guys were talking about the show, about the game last night.
Oh, it's nice that you listened to us in the car.
I still listened in the car.
In your new car.
Yes, that's right.
Congratulations.
Got a car from our sponsor. Drew, you have to say it because there's so many words in it.
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC.
That's right.
There you go.
Daniel and Tom helped me and did a great job. And they got me out of there quick. I thought I was going to be really late when I messaged you. Anyhow, my apologies, gentlemen.
That's okay. We'll let it slide.
We'll talk a little later about the Ezzy promotion that they're going to run. The best idea ever. Last night's game was interesting that the Jets didn't play well and still outplayed Washington, which is a sign of a team that's maturing, but it's also a sign that Washington is just aimless.
I was in my seats last night, and you guys were up in the box, so I messaged you after the game and said, what did you see from up there?
You didn't message me after the game.
I don't care about your insight that much.
Wow.
Large.
Anyways, but I messaged...
Your hair isn't green. That was a lie.
It was a lie. So I messaged you after the game, and you said Washington's a mess.
They're a mess.
And, I mean, obviously it sort of resembles that given where their place is in the standings right now. But what makes you say that they're a mess? Like, what did you see that...
To me, the Jets didn't play particularly well last night, and they outplayed them, to me, by a fairly large margin. And the Jets usually only, you know, out-chance a team and outplay a team when they're playing at their best or close to it. The Jets weren't at their best yesterday. I thought they looked nervous. And, you know, rightfully so. Lots of these guys haven't been through it before. That's a learning experience that comes along, that, you know, goes with a maturing team. But they came in. And in Washington overall, I mean, you watch the skill level. I don't understand some of the line combinations that Dale Hunter was throwing out there. I mean, I don't mind their defense for whatever reason. the Washington Capitals employ a man-to-man system in the defensive zone. And if you look, think back on the game last night, guys, how many chances the Jets have cutting to the slot? They had about six or seven great chances.
I mean, Buffett's goal was him cutting into the slot.
Cutting to the slot.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit of a four-on-four, so a little bit different. But
yeah,
cutting to the slot, that's where they were getting a lot of their chances. And why is that? Well, in a man-to-man coverage, it's hard to do. It's hard to cover, especially on corners and especially cutting in cutters like that. And, you know, it's like playing basketball. Where's the pressure coming from? From the cutters. You're making the passes.
Speaking of where things were, was Alexander Semin in that game?
Well, that's another thing.
I'm serious. Was he in the game?
Well,
he almost killed Burmistrov in the first period there.
He was basically,
I could barely notice the guy in the game.
Invisible. But I don't know why they waited till the second last shift of the game to put Semin and Ovechkin together. They clearly missed Backstrom, but that's not the only issue. This team has issues, and they're not that aggressive. They don't show much in the way of heart. They're a mess.
It's funny you mentioned,
because the skill isn't even carrying them anymore. At the beginning of the game, their speed was causing the Jets into turnovers.
Richie, when you look at the Washington Capitals, it's funny you mentioned aggression. And I thought if you were to do the boxing fight card, yeah, if you were to break down each period, I think the only period the Jets won was the second. I think the Capitals won the first and the third. You win two periods, you should win the game. And it's funny you mentioned aggression, because you've got players like Troy Brouwer, mm-hmm, big guy, skilled. Jason Chimera, big guy. I know Mike Knuble, you made a point during the game that you like the forechecking of Mike Knuble. These are big, tough, gritty players.
They have him on the left wing. He's a right winger. I mean,
I think that they do have aggressive players, but I think that it's almost like you have teams within a team. You have the highly skilled guys,
but that goes back,
and then you have the gritty guys, and how is this all going to come together?
That goes back to the leaders need to be, to me, more often than not, the best players.
Right.
And on this team, the leaders,
it's not Brooks-like, but he did get a goal,
are the fringe guys. Right. I like Brooks-like's game. Yep. The Jets need a guy like Brooks-like. And lots of teams do, but the Jets particularly, a little more size, grit up front, you know, can do a lot of things. But when you have a team that the leaders are supposed to be Mike Green, Alex Ovechkin, Alexander Semin.
Yep.
Have any of them proven they could be leaders? And if that's the case, then you have your lesser players being leaders. But if the best players aren't listening to them or responding to them, then they're not leaders.
It's a locker room problem to some degree.
And Dale Hunter, to me,
does he look like he's checked out?
Well, not necessarily. I think what he's there to do, and I think this is part of a mandate probably from the GM.
Interim.
Let's see what these guys can do. Because, you know, here, I've personally given Bruce Boudreau some criticism. I thought that he needed to have a more defensive conscience and able to take the team to the next level. I stand by that. However, the issue wasn't solely with Bruce Boudreau. So we can point to Dale Hunter and issues that we have with him, sure. But that's not the main issue. The main issue is the players. And I think George McPhee and Hunter, if Hunter's there interim or not, the goal is this. You prove to us how much you want it, how much you care, and what you can do. Because we've added the goaltender, who didn't look good yesterday, by the way. We've added the checking guys like Brouwer. Mm-hmm. We've added the grit guys. We've given you what you needed, center depth last year in Jason Arnott. We've added to the defense. We've got Wyatt.
We've added a highly paid defenseman who was a healthy scratch last night.
Yeah, Hammer. Yeah, exactly. But you've done all those things. So you've fixed the needs that were apparently there, and your team still hasn't improved. Is it you not addressing the right needs, or is it the core talent? And if that's the case, Semin's a pending UFA. Mike Green, I believe, is a pending RFA. What's next?
I don't level as much criticism onto Mike Green because he hasn't been healthy. He hasn't been healthy, so it's hard to really be. It's hard to be a leader on that team if you're not healthy.
And he was suspended.
He's just not a leader, though.
Well, that's fine.
He's never made a commitment to defense.
Well, I mean,
and that's part of being there. You have to always be vocal. He's never made a commitment to defense, and he's a defenseman.
Right.
Why do you think he wasn't on the Canadian Olympic team?
And at this point, he is what he is. He's not. It's not exactly like he's a 20-year-old. I mean, he's.
Well, he moves
he's
up
a
the
veteran.
Ice.
He's a veteran at this point.
He had one rush last night. Beautiful, great puck carrying skills, good skating.
But if he's only doing that once a game, he's not doing anything. Because I mean, he's not helping you out in the defensive zone at all.
In terms of the Jets, you know, I thought that again. I think the Jets are playing a far more calm defensive game.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go to break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk from the Jets' perspective last night, and we'll look ahead to the at the Eastern Conference standings
because
there's lots going on.
I want to break down that 5-on-3.
We'll break that down.
Could cost them the season.
We'll break that down when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Send us your tweets. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Coming up in about 15 minutes' time, Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News is going to join us to talk about the Sabres and their recent surge into playoff contention. Let's talk about the Jets game last night there, Richard. You wanted to start with a 5-on-3 power play.
I had some concerns about the 5-on-3 power play, and I pointed it out. You weren't up there last night, Drew, but I pointed it out to the guys before the end of the period there, and they had a 5-on-3. And I know teams don't have a ton of practice time, so I have to understand that they don't.
The Jets have had a ton of practice time.
Sure, but you know, the foremost concerns is probably not a 5-on-3 power play. I mean, it gets attention, but the 5-on-4 will get more attention because it happens more often.
Right.
Some concerns are just the alignment on the 5-on-3 power play. You know, they have Bufflin and Enstrom on the points. I don't mind that.
Yep.
You have a great puck mover in Enstrom. You got a good shot in Bufflin. You can join. They can both join the rush. Put pressure and get low in the zone. They had Ladd stationed in front. And then they had Wheeler on the right side and Little on the left. Didn't like Wheeler on the right side. And because what happens is if you're setting him up in the 5-on-3 format, if he's passing to the point, he's got his kind of... You know, he's not really in a scoring position because he's a right-handed shooting guy on the right side, okay? He also creates a ton of pressure and action on the left side for a right winger. And you want him on your off wing. And so I said, you want the guy like that on his off wing because if a chance comes at the net, then the guy's on his off wing, he can tuck it in.
Right.
Okay? Now, it might be that you take Brian Little off the power play, who I don't love on the power play, maybe on that 5-on-3 situation, because his speed is really, you know, it's not a factor.
Yeah.
And you put Wheeler on the left side, and maybe you put your best scorer, Evander Kane, on the right. Or even a guy like Antropov on the right. A left-handed shot on the far side.
I was thinking...
And Antropov's big, he can go in front of the net, too.
Yeah.
You want a screen pressure, too, right?
Right.
So Kane or Antropov.
And you're saying that because, you know, it's easier for a one-timer, things like that, if the guy's on the off-wing?
Because what happened was...
Yeah.
Funny enough, what happened was the puck popped out. You know, they showed it as a highlight of the night, one of the highlights last night. Vokoun's save on Wheeler on the 5-on-3.
Right.
But what was Wheeler doing?
Arguably the nicest save of the night.
But what was Wheeler doing? Shooting from his backhand because he's on that right side. And when you shoot from your backhand, you're not going to have as much mustard on it as you are on your forehand. And it's going to take you longer. And he flicked it. Vokoun made a nice save. But remember, Vokoun is a left-handed goalie also. He catches with his right hand. So what happens is it's a blocker side. So it's even more of an advantage there if you're shooting it from the lefty to the blocker side because it's not a glove. And the goalies are weaker on their blocker side than their glove.
In short, to sort of sum it up, what the Jets were not putting their players in their best possible scoring opportunity.
In that situation, I didn't think so.
You'd rather have the guys on their off wing.
In that 5-on-3
situation. So they're in the strongest spot.
Wheeler, I like on the left side of the power play. Ladd, I don't mind in front. Then either... First of all, I know they called the timeout, and I don't mind use of the timeout, but Evander Kane might be your best scorer.
Why isn't he out on the ice?
You've got to get some ice time on that 5-on-3.
Yep.
I would agree with that. He is your best scorer. He's your best pure goal scorer on that team.
Right. And now Antropov, and I don't mind him because he's a left-handed shot. He's a big body, and he moves the puck well.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good puck mover. And on a 5-on-3, the whole thing idea is a guy's a good player. Some guys who are great 5-on-5 players, like Eric Cole, has been a very good 5-on-5 player throughout his career, has never really been a power play player because his speed...
Yeah.
And his ability to go down and take the shots and down the wing, which he scores in Montreal on, is not a factor really on the power
play. He's essentially going to be a big body in front of the net, getting
goals.
He's
not a great passer.
Getting goals. Even though he is a winger, he'll be the type of guy, he'll play down low, and he'll get the dirty rebound goals. In a situation like that, he'd get a rebound or something.
Right.
As the 5-on-3, it's funny. Richie, you mentioned that yesterday, too, that the Jets don't practice the 5-on-3, and many teams don't. I think that
Assuming. I mean, I haven't been a ton of practice. I'm assuming, just based on the priority list, 5-on-3 power plays don't get, or aren't higher than many other issues.
No, but you know, I mean, teams do a lot of flow drills and a lot of system drills and a lot of individual drills. Mm-hmm. But the problem I also had with that 5-on-3... Well, I mean, let's be honest. If you watch a team like the Detroit Red Wings, you see the five best players on the ice every time. You're going to see the same guys go out. There is no matching up. And, you know, Stapleton, he gets put on the point, and that's fine. But, you know, I think that 5-on-3, it's funny. The Jets had a power play earlier on in the game, the first power play the Jets had. They didn't score a goal, but they got three shots and had just great pressure there in the first period, even though they didn't play a very good period.
Yep.
But, you know, Dustin Bufflin, I think I have it right here. I think he had 9 shots on goal yesterday.
He had nine shots on net.
And Dustin Byfuglien, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, is especially at home, one of the best power play defensemen in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he doesn't get credit for the way he moves the puck either. Of course, he has one of the hardest shots in the league.
Great hockey
sense.
He has great hockey sense for a guy his size. Is he playing his best hockey of the year in the last couple weeks?
Oh, I think so.
Yes, Drew.
I mean, last night he makes that kick play and it ends up
and
in a goal.
He's injured.
He's made very few errors in the defensive zone as compared to earlier in the season. And he's producing at an offensive clip like he was before and picking his spots.
And he's fighting a lower body injury as well. Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, the guy, you got to give credit where credit is due. I've always loved Byfuglien. And 2 years ago when the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, the way he was causing fits for Vancouver defensemen, and then later on Philadelphia, that's when he was a forward, by the way.
Yeah.
But the decision, to put Byfuglien up as a forward on the 4-on-4. He was maybe not a forward, but he was roving,
yep.
And he went in and Kane fed him the pass.
Yep.
I mean, it was a very... there's a reason why he got the first star. It was a very well-earned first star for Byfuglien
yesterday.
Great.
He really has. You know, Klitson's been impressive as well. The Jets defense as a whole is making less errors, and they're playing a more controlled game. The Jets have been outplaying these guys. They outplayed Washington. They outplayed Dallas. They deserve to win both games. Pavlik hasn't really been tested that much. Was last, you know, did Pavlik really have to make any crazy saves over the past 2 games?
They're not relying on him as much.
That's
they're playing a more balanced game.
That's better.
Which, I mean, like you said, is a sign of maturity to some extent.
Sure.
Now,
sure.
I'll be very curious to see what happens next week when their schedule gets a lot harder.
Well, and they go on the road.
Yeah, well,
because
Pittsburgh?
Let's see, we can talk all we want about this team being an improved team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then they go to Vancouver, play a pretty solid game. Then they go to Calgary and lay it dead. What are they going to do on the road? Because good teams win on the road. And good teams can win when they don't have every favorable matchup. Right?
How many points do they have to get on the road next week?
4 out of 6, at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
4 out of 6? So they have to steal one in Pittsburgh or Nashville?
Yeah. You know, if you can somehow get some overtime points out of those.
Well, if you take 3, though. The Washington one's the big one. If you can steal and if you can take one of those games to overtime.
I mean, it's really a 3-horse race now. I mean, Tampa is done.
Tampa's done.
Toronto's done. So it's Buffalo, Washington, and Winnipeg. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, but you know, Washington could still crumble.
Well, very easily. They have a hard schedule coming up. They play tomorrow night. They play Dallas and Detroit and Chicago back to back.
As a fan of the Jets, I would be more worried about Buffalo than I would Washington.
Also, keep in mind that next Friday, Washington plays Thursday. They play in Philly Thursday.
But Philly to Washington's an hour.
I know it's not, but they
train ride, isn't it?
So. Yeah, the Jets will be rested though. The Jets play Tuesday, then they play Friday. So
fair enough.
Washington's got 3 hard games next week. And, you know, we're going to talk to Mike Harrington coming up in a couple minutes.
And conversely, the Jets play Saturday against Nashville.
Right, of course.
I mean, you give it, you take it. You know,
exactly. Before we go to break and then we go to Mike, I want to play the audio from... these are Alex Ovechkin's comments last night post-game about the Crosby is better chant.
Nice to hear. It's a fans. And, you know, it's always nice when they talk about it and, you know, they give it a chance. And I love it. I know. It's great for the league. It's great for us. And, you know, everybody thinks who's better, who's not. And again, for me, it's nice atmosphere, and I love it. Yeah.
The fans are going to make this team a desirable free agent town, and then ownership's going to do their part in that, and the players are going to do their part in that. But the fans are doing their part in that because, as Robidas said on Wednesday, after Wednesday's game, as you got all the audio, and Ovechkin said yesterday, and you would know firsthand, they are noticing it, and word spreads between players, and so the fans are going to have an impact on who wants to play here eventually.
Well, guys, you know, we're from Winnipeg, and we are not, and you can't say that we're being homers, okay? Because Tariq El-Bashir, who's a Washington Capitals writer, he was saying Montreal's a loud arena, Chicago's a loud arena, but this is a small arena, and I haven't heard an arena any louder than this.
He said Winnipeg gives him a headache.
Winnipeg gives him a headache,
and not in a negative sense, in that the fans are so loud, he gets a headache covering a game in Winnipeg.
Twitter was absolutely blowing up yesterday. Crosby is better was trending on Twitter. They were talking about it on TSN. Roy McGregor of the Globe and Mail, who's a favorite of ours, was saying that was the best game that he's seen all year. Maybe not as far as the quality of hockey, but the intensity level.
You can't match it.
You can't match it. And you know, we obviously, you know, have a semi-biased opinion in that we're there every game and we're covering the Jets.
I don't think we do, Ezzy. But you know, you and I have been to a fair amount of other arenas in the National Hockey League.
Yep.
We were in Calgary during the Stanley Cup run of 2004.
Yep.
Loud, but not this loud. It's not the slouchiest.
No, no. I think that it's fair.
Vancouver,
to say
not
this
loud.
Is the loudest arena.
Vancouver's a bandwagon town. Not this loud. Edmonton's always been known as a quiet crowd. Playoffs, they get loud, but they've been known as a quiet crowd. Toronto, they're looking for their money under the seats.
No, they're sushi. They're at the sushi bar.
And Montreal's loud. I mean, the only other, I think Montreal and Chicago are the two ones, and New York.
Yeah.
Those and Philly. I mean, those are the real loud ones. Boston, too. I mean, those are real big American towns. Get really into it.
But wait, Richie, we know the MTS Center. Sorry to cut you off. We know the MTS Center is world-renowned for the quality of the acoustics. When bands come to Winnipeg and play in the MTS Center, it's really renowned for having really good sound quality. And that's probably making it even better, the fact that it's a small rink, 15,000 fans. It's unreal. I mean, you know, if you're fortunate enough to go to a game this year, you know that it's a bar none best atmosphere in the NHL.
Yeah, I think best atmosphere. I think then it's not a question of who's top. It's a question of who's second.
I mean, it's the only arena where writers or people watching on television talk about the crowd.
That's right.
I mean, you can't overstate it. I mean, I know we, you know,
and look at their success at home.
Yeah,
I mean, well, we can, and Ezzy called that from a mile away.
Are we giving Ezzy credit again?
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see what happens on Sunday. A little quieter, but I'm thinking it's going to be just as loud because every game now has playoff implications.
Let's go back out to Hustler. He's at the Timbit Hockey Jamboree at the MTS Iceplex. Hustler, how's it going?
It's going very well, thanks, guys. I'm with my illustrious partner Gary Lawless, and gee, what a day here! 97 Timbit teams playing. Obviously, the Jets have just finished practice. This is what it's all about.
So this is one of those great Canadian days where you've got the National Hockey League team, players that were Timbit players once in their own lives. They're here working out. You've got all the Timbits players around them, getting a chance to look at their heroes, and you know. Maybe there's a Sidney Crosby somewhere in this group of the 97 Timbit teams. He's, you know, sort of the big figure in all of Tim Horton's marketing programs, a former Timbit player himself. Who knows, Huss? Maybe the next Sid is here today.
Well, Kevin Cheveldayev, of course, was here watching his team, and I saw him perusing out at a few of the 5- and 6-year-old games. Did he have his notebook out? He did. He was taking a few notes. But really, I mean, you've got incredible weather here, and I mean, I think Jets point, so many people out here just to get close to this team. We're just popped outside the Iceplex right now, and there's hundreds of people sitting here waiting for their heroes to pop out after practice. And as they say, maybe a few future stars out on the ice as part of Timbit Hockey.
So guys,
some good news on the Jets front. We just spoke with Zach Bogosian. He says he's ready to go. He's going to be a player tomorrow night. So now the next question is, who comes out, Hustler?
That's a tough call. Grant Klitz is playing some great hockey right now. Randy Jones, of course. Mark Flood's already out. So, needless to say, that's a great problem for a coach Noel to have. And I'm sure a few of the Timbit coaches have the same problems with just too much talent on their teams of 5 and 6s. Guys, keep up the great work. We'll get back at you in about half an hour here from the MTS Iceplex at the Timbit Jamboree.
Sounds good, guys. We'll speak to you in a bit. Let's go to
Thanks
break.
Lot, guys.
When we come back, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's Ezra Ginsberg, that's Richard Pollock, and I'm Drew Mindell.
Little Radiohead.
Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program our good friend from the Buffalo News, Mike Harrington. Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. We're in the wild stretch drive, and I thoroughly enjoyed watching that game last night.
It was a pretty good atmosphere, and a pretty good contest for two teams desperate to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked in Buffalo about the atmosphere there. I can certainly vouch the MTS Center is the best one in the league I've been to. And after the Buffalo visit, the most recent one, there was a tremendous controversy here about why our building isn't even close to that. So you definitely, the fans in Winnipeg made an impression on the fans in Buffalo that night for sure.
So you haven't been chanting silver medal at Ryan Miller?
No, there has been no silver medal chant at Ryan Miller. Very, very high in the creativity scale.
they are quite more,
yeah,
way more creative, especially after having that much alcohol in them. You wouldn't think they'd be as creative, but they seem to be stepping up their A game, as it were.
Yeah, and they certainly, you know, got to Ovechkin last night, too. So, I mean, yeah. Volume is an A, creativity is an A. You can't ask for much more than that.
Certainly not. Mike, you know, if you look back, you know, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, the Sabres were left for dead. You know, are you surprised, as a lot of people are, that they've been able to turn it around and really get into that playoff chase?
I really am. When you guys saw the Sabres in January, they were in the midst of a franchise record 12-game road losing streak. They looked like they were heading for a top-5 pick. And realistically, you know, last year they finished 16-4-4 and snuck in, and people didn't think that could happen again, but they got healthy. Some guys got back, and Ryan Miller started playing like Ryan Miller. He got the concussion from the Lucic hit in November, and concussions are a tricky thing, and especially with goalies, and sometimes guys are on the ice for several weeks and are still not right. And that seemed to be what happened here. The Sabres sank into last place in the East on February 17th. And obviously, February 17th, you're in last place. You're done. And lo and behold, they haven't been done. And they've played really well since. Miller's been almost impenetrable in some games. And here they are right in the thick of the race. And I think they're still looking like they're in pretty good shape.
Mike, you know, there's a player I'm very high on is Tyler Ennis. If he's healthy all year long, are the Sabres in this situation right now?
No, I mean, basically, the Miller injury from the Lucic hit was a problem. Tyler Myers missed 19 games with a broken wrist. That's a huge problem, and he's out now tonight and Monday with his suspension. And Tyler Ennis missed two stretches of 17 games with a high ankle sprain, and that really stagnated the offense. They were, for quite a while, last in the league in goals on the road. They didn't generate any offense, and Lindy Ruff made the key move, putting Ennis at center here the last couple weeks, and he's really thrived in the middle. It's kind of begged the question why he didn't play center the last 2 years. He did it in junior, and in the NHL he's been mostly on the wing. But Ennis, Stafford, and Marcus Foligno, just up from the minor leagues, have put together 15 points in the last three games. It's really become the top line here all of a sudden. And Ennis has been terrific with the puck, and right now he's the number one center on the team.
Mike, Andre Sequeira is going to be back in the lineup. He missed some games. You look at his stats and maybe you see 13 points, but why is his return so big for the Sabres?
You know, he's another good puck mover. But while his offensive stats are down, this has been his best defensive year. He's really played really well with Robin Regier. They've been a good shutdown pair. I don't look at Robin Regier's heavy minus stats. He's minus 18 or 19 because this team just didn't score goals for so long. Robin Regier is literally never on the ice when they put the puck in the net. So, you know, that was a real good shutdown pair that was stopping other teams' lines. And it's a 20-minute-a-game guy, and that's what you need right now with Myers on suspension. And Mike Weber has really been struggling pretty brutally. So getting Sequeira back is really going to help this team. Even if he can only go 15 or 16 tonight, he said he's feeling better every day. So by next week, he should be back to where he was.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News.
You know, Mike, we saw Buffalo come through town on the end of a road trip after, you know, maybe surprisingly beating both San Jose and Vancouver, although both teams kind of been struggling lately.
And Anaheim.
And Anaheim as well. One of the things that, you know, again, they were at the end of a road trip, so I might have caught them on an off night, but it seemed like up front, you know, I was trying to reconcile, you know, the coaching style and, you know, Lindy Ruff with, at least up front, maybe a little bit on the back end, the team seemed a little bit soft. Is that the case, in your opinion? And if so, how does Lindy Ruff coach a team that may not be within his personality?
Well, I mean, that's been a criticism of them for a long time. You know, certainly the Lucic thing brought that into focus.
Right.
They traded Gostad. You know, you guys saw March 5th, that game. It was 1-1 with 10 minutes to go.
Right.
And you're right, it was the end of the road trip. I don't think they had a lot left in the tank that night. I was actually pleasantly surprised they were still tied with 10 minutes left and made a terrible error for a breakaway goal costing that game. They're not the Flyers. They're not the Bruins. They don't have a lot of jam up front. But they have some. You know, Foligno's added to that mix some. He's
right.
A big body. Coletta certainly is a rat that, you know, you love to have in your team and other teams hate. I think the Sabres being a soft team is a little overstated because of the Lucic incident. I don't think they've played all that soft since then. Obviously, they weren't there when they were needed that night. But, you know, I think that's a little bit overstated that they're a soft team. I think they just simply have a certain personality. And, you know, some nights they're softer than others. But, you know, they went to Anaheim, and that's certainly a pretty tough team.
Right.
And they had no problem matching shove for shove and punch for punch that night.
Mike, tonight is obviously a huge game. The Buffalo Sabres are playing the Florida Panthers, and now they're 1 point behind the Jets after the Jets won last night's game versus the Capitals. For the Buffalo Sabres, is tonight's game like last night's game for the Jets? Are they looking at this game as one of the biggest games of the year for them?
You know, I think that they're basically of the mindset that every game is like that. They can't afford to blow a lot of points here. I mean, to lose a point Wednesday to the Avalanche on a tying goal with 1.9 seconds left was really hard to take. They would have had a 6-game winning streak at home. And, you know, the Capitals have stolen a few points lately at the end of games. The Sabres haven't really stolen a lot of points at the end of games. So they're taking that mindset that every game is something they can't afford to give up on. And they have it, you know, the toughest part of their schedule is over with that long Western trip, but they have some rough games here left. Everybody does. I mean, to be honest with you guys, most people here aren't looking at the Jets as much of an issue simply because the Jets have been so heavily home-centric that when they're going to go on the road here for 7 out of the last 10, right, people think the Jets just aren't going to be able to survive that. So
they might be right.
Yeah, I think most people in Buffalo are looking at this as a Sabres-Capitals race, and everyone in Buffalo was rooting for the Jets in regulation last night and got what they wanted.
And we were saying before you hopped on, Mike, I think that the Sabres probably more of a threat to the Jets than Washington. If you watch Washington night in, night out, I mean, they're getting by on talent, but it'll be interesting to see. And another player, we haven't spoken to you since the trade, the big trade, the trade deadline that saw the Sabres acquire Cody Hutchinson. He was lined up as a second-line center when we saw him here, again, at the end of a road trip, but a guy with immense potential and high skill level. What was your thought personally on that trade, and how has he played since then?
Well, I like the trade. They needed a center. Vancouver wanted a wing. I think the Sabres felt Foligno was even more advanced than Cassian was, and I think that's been proven out so far. The issue with Hodgson here, it's 8-9 games, no points. I think the guy's just out of gas. You know, if he plays the whole year, he will have played 48 road games, many of which with the Vancouver Canucks and all their travel. When he was acquired, he was in Phoenix. He had to fly all the way to Buffalo to do his physical and paperwork, fly all the way back to the West Coast to play. I just think this guy's energy tank is absolutely on zero, and he's only had either 2 or 3 practices with the Sabres. They've just had no practice time whatsoever here. So he's going to be, they're thinking he's like a James Neal type. If you remember, James Neal did nothing for the Pittsburgh Penguins the second half of last year after he got acquired. And it took until the next season to get a training camp and get him going. I think the Sabres are hoping to get something out of Hodgson here and hoping to have him over the summer, get him into training camp, and really let him go start of next year. But down the road, long term, I think it's a great acquisition. I mean, short term right now, obviously they're not getting much from him.
42 minutes or so past the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News.
Mike, you mentioned Tyler Myers and the suspension. I like Tyler Myers' game. From an objective point of view, the hit he laid on Scott Gomez, was a suspension enough to, you know, enough to kind of police the game moving forward for other players seeing that, you know, he got a few games, but he blindsided Gomez from behind into the boards, no puck around. It seemed to me like it was about as dirty of a hit I've seen this year.
Nah.
No, you don't agree?
He got 3 games.
Yeah.
He's a first-time offender. He made a stupid hit, a little bit of frustration. He got high-sticked in the face a few seconds before that. There was no call. The Sabres are pretty riled. Not that he got suspended, but they're still looking at it from the standpoint. Nathan Gerby took exactly the same hit in December from Marc-Andre Bourdon of the Flyers. Mm-hmm. Missed a month with a concussion, missed 10 games. There wasn't even a hearing. So they want to know not only how does Myers get 3 games for a first time, which for a first time has been pretty harsh this year, and Bourdon got nothing.
Consistency in the NHL aren't friends,
I looked at it live. When Myers made the play, I turned to guy next to me in the press box said, there's a Shannon ban. It was obviously a suspension.
Yeah. See, to me, the hit from behind is more dangerous than...
It was a stupid hit. It was a dangerous hit. He got 3 games. The fact is they're not giving 10 games for those hits the first time, and the Sabres still want to know how Bourdon got nothing.
Mike, going back to the trade deadline, the other big move that the Sabres made was dealing Paul Gostad. The reaction in Buffalo, did they do well getting that first-round pick?
We were baffled. I mean, we kind of think Poyle is French for sucker. We don't know what Nashville was thinking.
Is that you know, a commentary on Gostad's game as of late?
To some degree. I mean, here's a guy who has no, you know, you're a team in Nashville going for the Stanley Cup. You're going to make a run. You just traded for a guy, gave a first-round pick for a guy with no career playoff goals in 38 games.
Wow.
Now, I know he's not there to score. He's there to, you know, win face-offs, and he's there to add toughness. Of course, this is a guy who didn't respond to Milan Lucic until the next time they played 2 weeks later. But you gave up a first-round pick for him. And then Darcy Regier set the price and said, if we don't get that, we're not trading him. And lo and behold, he got the price. And let's be honest here. On deadline day, when the word got out they were looking for a first-round pick, everyone was laughing. We're talking Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun, all the big-name national types, myself included, we were laughing at the thought the Sabres were holding out for a first-round pick. We were floored that the Nashville Predators gave it up. Let's see what Paul Gostad does for them in the postseason.
So, Mike, what you're saying is that Darcy Regier did pretty well.
Darcy Regier was getting skewered in this town for weeks. He was getting skewered on deadline day because there had been nothing going on until about 2:45. Yeah. And all of a sudden, between 2:45 and 3:30, I think he went from about a D-minus to about an A. So sometimes that can happen in the life of a general manager. And that day, I think he certainly did pretty well.
Yeah, I think you could say he did well on both deals. Is that the criticism of Regier, is that a carryover from the summer action?
No, at the time, everyone around the league, let's be honest here, everyone around the league thought the Sabres, A, did well, and B, overpaid. Okay, you overpay in free agency anyway. When was the last time the Sabres got a veteran player to waive his no-trade clause and come to Buffalo, which they do with Robin Regier? When was the last time they traded for rights for a free agent and signed him before July 1st in Christian Ehrhoff? Never happened. And when was the last time the Buffalo Sabres were in on one of the top three or four free agents on the market, which Ville Leino was back in July? And Ville Leino's played very well the last 15 games, by the way. So taken on those things, Regier did very well. The perception started dropping as the season went along here, and you saw the way Ehrhoff and Leino were playing. But if you just look at the moves and look at the history of the recent past of the Buffalo Sabres, Regier was much better in recent history and really surprised a lot of outside people.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy the stretch drive, and it'll be a chaotic 10-11 games, but it should be entertaining.
All right, gentlemen, thanks as always.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Before we go to break, email from a listener in Las Vegas. Les and Andy say they're listening in from Las Vegas.
Awesome.
And they were watching the Jets game last night, and go Jets, go. Great win last night.
Awesome.
Thanks, Les and Andy, for listening in. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Big thank you to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, Tom Lynn, the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild, is going to join us. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Well done.
Drew, do you know what love is?
That's creepy, but no.
That was the song we were just listening to.
Oh, okay.
You don't know what love is by the White Stripes.
White Stripes, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Come on, I wouldn't just randomly ask you a creepy question.
Drew,
like
you're
that,
getting married. Drew. Don't you know what love is?
I know what love is with my fiance. With Ezzy, I was a little bit creeped out. I thought he was hitting on me a little bit.
To be honest, I have love for Carbone Pizza.
Well, you guys were there last Sunday, I believe. Had a little pizza.
I'm always there.
Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday.
Yeah,
you guys, a little pizza.
You know my schedule better than me.
Richie was wondering if it was Saturday or Sunday because we also had a little pizza and a little beer. That's why.
Yeah, I understand. Let's look ahead at the next week for the Winnipeg Jets. We know that they have Tuesday night in Pittsburgh against the Sidney Crosby Penguins.
Yep.
Which is just an extra layer of difficulty the Jets didn't need. Then they have Friday, we spoke about it, the rematch, big rematch in Washington.
Yep.
And then Saturday in Nashville. Very difficult schedule. If you had to pick one of the three games that the Jets are most capable of winning, it's the Washington game.
Yeah.
A place they've had some success this year. They obviously beat the Caps in the shootout, and they lost to them in overtime once. So they haven't had a regulation loss in Washington yet.
Yeah, you're talking about Pittsburgh as the best team, in my opinion, in the league right now. And then you have Nashville, who's one of the top three teams probably in the West, arguably.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Washington, which is, they're all over the place. So that's obviously the game that they must have and probably have the best chance at winning. But that's a hard schedule. Make no bones about it. And they played Nashville in the second half of a back-to-back with travel.
Right.
And a fair amount of travel. I mean, they're flying from Washington to Nashville. I'm not sure how far that
it's
is.
It's not that far. I mean, Washington's fairly south in the...
I'll pull up my map later, but I mean...
It's a couple hours.
It's not an easy flight over. And what you're doing now is you're playing, Pittsburgh. I don't know how they match up with Pittsburgh. I just don't know how they match up. It's going to be very difficult if they're playing. I mean, they're going to be fully healthy. Pittsburgh, you got your Crosby line, you got your Malkin line, you got your Staal line. Letang's back. Fleury looks great. I mean, they might get Johnson. If they get Johnson, that'd be a nice little refresher. But Pittsburgh also wants to get the number one spot.
Brett Johnson, you mean.
Yeah. Also wants to get the number one spot here. And I think Johnson was hurt.
Yep.
So, I think in the Pittsburgh game, if you can get any sort of point, you are so happy.
Yeah.
And I know they're all must-win games, but to me, the Pittsburgh's in a different ballpark than the Jets. The Carolina game's an easy game. So if you look at it from a point of the next four games, well, then they got to get Carolina. Mm-hmm. They got to get Washington. If they get any other points from the other two ones, that's fine. But the rest of their road games, for the most part, aren't difficult.
Right. No, the rest of their road games, they have to do the Tampa, Florida. Mm-hmm. They do Tampa and Florida.
Bad teams.
I know
Florida's third, but they're a bad team.
They do Carolina again.
Yeah. Not a good team.
And they do the Islanders.
Not a good team.
True.
That's four, and then the three this week makes seven. I mean,
but they can't. Can they really afford to lose more than if they lose Nashville? And they lose Pittsburgh.
500 on the road. 500 on the road and win the rest at home.
Well, I mean, it depends on the other guys who are doing. Again, we keep having a point of what they need to do, but these teams around them aren't exactly
No, but guys, getting back to Richie, talking about that road trip, as far as I'm concerned, you're right. But, I mean, the next, let's say, even six games, because after the road trip, you're coming home and then you've got the second place in the East, Ottawa Senators, and then you got the first in the East, New York Rangers. So, as far as I'm concerned,
they're still unlikely to make the playoffs. I mean, we should say that.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that statement.
People in the town hope that they do, and it'd be great for the town if they do. But if you had to bet on it, you would bet that they wouldn't make the playoffs.
Richie, you lost the two games in Vancouver and Calgary, and then you come home and you beat Dallas and Washington, so you're still in it.
You look at
but when you go on the road, and if you don't get 4 out of 6 points, if you only manage to get, let's say, 2 or 3 points,
but what do you
you're not going to be able to recover that, knowing that you're coming back playing Ottawa and the Rangers.
Do you think they'll be able to get 3, Ezzy? Like, let's be realistic here.
Oh, I think it's going to be tough. Don't get me wrong. I think it's going to be tough for the Jets.
I'd say the under.
They can easily beat Carolina. But when you go on the road, you're playing the best team in the league right now, Pittsburgh, winners of 10 games in a row, even though they're playing New Jersey right now. We'll try to get an update. New Jersey's beaten them 3 out of 4 times this year. New Jersey always beats Pittsburgh.
Great.
Go back historically. I'm just saying, their winning streak might come to an end today.
They're still better than the Jets.
They're still the best team in the league, or whatever, one of the best. So, and then you've got Washington and Nashville back-to-back. So, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, degree of difficulty, instead of giving the chances of the Jets making the playoffs, because as far as I'm concerned, people fixate on that too much. I think the degree of difficulty out of 10 is probably a 7 or 8. I mean, these are tough teams. The Predators are a very good team. And the Penguins are a really good team. And the Capitals are no pushover. So, I mean, they're going to have to play their best hockey.
This is what's going
to
happen when you play against a team like Nashville. They're going to pair up their best defensemen against the Wheeler line.
Yeah.
And
their best defensemen are two of the best defensemen in the league.
That's right. And then you're going to wonder, okay, then who's going to score? Because they're likely going to prevent you from scoring.
Yeah.
For the most part. And the question is, can your second line score? And the Jets' second line right now doesn't look great. And the GSD line's not counted on for offense, and the fourth line is the fourth line.
Well, so the Jet line, by the way, now.
Sorry, yeah, but when you look at it that way, I mean, it's a difficult matchup for them, right? And then you look at it against Pittsburgh, well, how do the Jets match up defensively against Pittsburgh offensively? And that's what happens when you look at playoff series, is what the matchups are. Mm-hmm. In a game, anything can happen. It's a small sample, sure. But overall, I mean, how do the Jets defensively combat a Crosby line, a Malkin line? First of all, how does any team do that?
You can't.
But how? You know, at least Detroit can go 6 deep in their defensive guys. I mean,
the Jets, only way you do it, Richie, is you play
with a voodoo doll and a prayer.
No. I mean,
and Washington didn't play well yesterday. But hey, it was 2-2 into the third period.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's not like the Jets went out there and killed them. Washington on the road is a tough game.
Let's look at Buffalo's schedule. Buffalo's got at Florida tonight.
Yeah.
At Tampa on Monday.
Easy.
Home to Montreal on Wednesday.
It's not exactly a tough schedule, Drew.
At the Rangers on Friday.
It's tough.
And then home to the Wild on Saturday. That's the next week of the schedule.
What did I tell you? You're worried about Buffalo, not Washington.
The Jets versus Sabres right now schedule is unquestionably in favor of Buffalo.
Buffalo should win 3 out of those 5 games.
Minimum.
Yeah.
They
should win. The only team that they shouldn't beat is the Rangers.
And are they better than Florida?
They're, to me, on paper, they're better than Florida.
Okay, so I mean, they should win at least 3 of those 5. They could even win 4 of those 5.
Right.
And then, I mean, then it probably is Buffalo, because you look at Washington's schedule, which we talked about.
It's difficult.
At Chicago on Sunday, at Detroit on Monday, and then at Philly on Thursday, and home to Winnipeg on Friday.
But watch out for Buffalo.
Watch out for Buffalo.
The way
it's a stretch drive. It'll be a dogfight for sure.
Drew, the way I qualify that too, Richie, is you know, we talked about this before coming up. The Jets obviously are going to play a team that they should beat in the Hurricanes. The Penguins were expecting a hard game. Let's just call that maybe not where you get any points. If they still manage to get 4 out of 6 points, then that lessens the load of the other hard games that they have, the Predators and then the Senators and the Rangers.
I don't even look at the Carolina game. If they are serious about making the playoffs, they have to beat Carolina, and they have to do it relatively easily.
That's right.
You look at the 3 road games starting Tuesday night.
Yep.
If they can get more than 2 points out of those 3 road games, I think they're happy.
Sure, 3-4, yeah.
If they can steal
a point in Washington, maybe.
Clean win against Washington, and then if they can steal a point either against Nashville or Pittsburgh, I think they're happy with that road trip.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, let's leave it there.
I thought we were assuming the Penguins were going to... Okay, fine.
Yeah. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Tom Lynn. He's the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. And we're going to be talking to, we'll go back to the MTS Iceplex to talk to Hustler. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Drew Mindell. That's Ezra Ginsberg. That's Richard Pollock. Let's go back out to the MTS Iceplex and join Hustler at the Timbit Hockey Jamboree.
Thanks, Drew. And boys, I'm here with my illustrious partner, Gary Lawless. And it's amazing. When you have 97 teams of 5- and 6-year-old kids rolling through 3 different rinks all day, the faces change, but the smiles are the same.
And pretty cool now. They're all coming out of their dressing room, and all the little guys have their medals. They all got medals today for their Timbit season. And Ezra would be happy about this. There's like 4 boxes, huge boxes, filled with Timbits, Ezra. And so the kids are getting those passed around pretty good. It's really exciting. And more Jets news. Claude Noel just held his scrum and confirmed, said that Zach Bogosian will be a player, because I already saw you guys had tweeted it, saying Gary Lawless has, Claude Noel says, not Gary Lawless, Zach Bogosian's a go tomorrow.
And, of course, the coach in pretty good spirits after a big win last night. And but, you know, win or lose, today at the Timbit Jamboree, it is about having fun. And, man, it is fun just to be around here and all these kids having the time of their life.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I can remember, you know, growing up in Peterborough and my dad taking me to the rink, and there weren't the Winnipeg Jets or the Toronto Maple Leafs or Montreal Canadiens weren't practicing on one of the other pads while I was learning to play half ice. So it's really kind of an experience I'm sure these kids will remember forever.
We're going to hook up with some of the Hortons people, of course, some of the players and the coaches over the rest of the Illegal Curve Show. Guys, thanks a lot, and we'll look forward to speaking to you again live from the Timbit Jamboree at the Iceplex in a few.
Sounds good, guys. We'll hit you up in about 25 minutes or so. There's Hustler and Lawless at the Timbit Hockey Jamboree at the MTS Iceplex.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program a first-time guest. He's the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild, Tom Lynn. Tom, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the program.
You're welcome. If there's noise in the background, that's the St. Patrick's Day Parade in St. Paul, so I apologize in advance.
No need to apologize for that. In fact, we'll be on our way there right away after the show so we can join in on drinking some green beer.
Good.
Tom, you know, the GM meetings just ended up earlier this week, I think, in Boca Raton, Florida, if I'm not mistaken. They never seem to hold them in a cold weather climate. I always find that coincidental. You know, what really goes on at the GM meetings?
You know, it's a very good question. From the inside out, you know, as an assistant GM, I would attend 2 formally of them a year, because they included assistant GMs, and once in a while another one. But from the outside, it probably seems more complex, you know, than it is. Gary Bettman's a very strong commissioner, as the modes go, so he sets an agenda in advance where he's already spoken to, you know, his governors and his important GMs and his staff about what needs to be discussed and what's ripe. So it's not a free-for-all. There's not people yelling like the British Commonwealth you see on cable television late at night. It's a very set agenda. He brings up things one at a time, and people speak in order.
Like there's a predetermined order as to who speaks on an issue?
Yeah, there'll be an agenda. Just for example, hockey operations, supplementary discipline. So it used to be Colin Campbell, but he tee it up, you'd show what happened in the last quarter, what they're thinking of, and then kind of open the floor up to the issues that are being discussed. And later on, they might speak about realignment. Later on, they might speak about playoff rules. But there's an agenda, and guys speak in order, and it's not quite Robert's Rules of Order, but it's fairly parliamentary.
Would I be wrong in saying it's the answers are preordained before they go into the room?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, like any business, you know, outside of the context of hockey, the chairman of a board of directors isn't going to go into a GE meeting not knowing which way things are going and which way they should go. Mm-hmm. So the same thing happens in a hockey context in the NHL. That being said, Commissioner Bettman especially doesn't like to put too much of a hard thumbprint on some pure hockey ops issues, you know, like rules changes, things like that. So he makes sure guys are heard on that, the GMs, and he kind of lets it go where it should. But he, in no way do they open up a meeting to anyone can introduce a new idea and vote on it right then. If there's no ideas, they're usually vetted through the competition committee or else things and brought up the next GM's meeting. So there's no real surprises in that context.
Tom, Alexander Radulov's name came up, especially earlier this week when it was announced that it was possible that he was coming back. And now, assuming that he does come back, why are so many teams upset about this?
Right. You know, it's a very good question. Like so many of the tough issues in hockey, there's no easy answer. On the one side, you feel bad for Nashville because a player took off on them, didn't observe his contract, and really left them in the lurch as far as the development of their team at that time. So you feel for Nashville, hey, if you get a chance to get this asset back and working, then they should be able to do it. On the other hand, all the rest of the teams in the league have been obeying these rules that once the guy plays in Europe, after the season starts, he has to clear waivers to come back. And you've seen players go through waivers over the years in order to come back and play in the league. So they're thinking, we play by the rules, and so everyone should. So there's no easy answer, but the other teams feel like since he's a significant impact player, that maybe this is a bit of a, how would you say, low-hanging fruit for Nashville they didn't have an opportunity for.
Further to that, he left Nashville despite having a valid contract with the Predators. Could the Predators not sort of, I mean, I don't know how they designated his contract status at that point when he left them in a lurch.
Entry level still.
But, I mean.
Suspended.
Suspended. So, you know, if he's suspended, or, I mean, they still own his contract and he's suspended.
Yeah.
You know, the normal waiver rule, it seems as though they shouldn't apply. So are these complaints sort of sour grapes more than anything?
Well, that would be, you know, that's a characterization of it. The normal waiver rules would have applied had the league decided to apply him. In other words, since this specific circumstance was not written up in the league bylaws, which controlled waivers, and the CBA, you know, the league had discretion on this. They could have said, well, the rule says if you play in Europe after the start of the season, you got to go through waivers. That would have been a legitimate position. And Nashville's side is saying it's not our fault.
Right.
I think going to the sour grapes position, the guy who makes out here is Radulov, who took off in his contract, made millions in Russia, and now will come back to finish out here and become a free agent. He's the only one with no pain in the game.
Is that the concern, Tom, that there's a slippery slope, that if they allow Radulov to do it, other players would then do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the concern was raised at GM's meetings, and considering the much, much lower number of Russians who were drafted and who play in the NHL compared to, say, 2003, that's playing out, you know, in the market. But you look at this year's draft, the top-rated player, Yakubov, is Russian. You've seen Semin, Filatov, other players, you know, have issues with their teams after being drafted in the top five. So it's a definite concern, and what do you do about it? I don't know the answer, but it's a concern.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Tom Lynn. He's the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild.
Tom, we've seen labor issues in the other big three sports all be settled for a prolonged period of time now moving forward. Hockey fans around Canada and the States and around the world really are concerned that there will be another labor stoppage this September. What do you foresee for this negotiations, and do you see the parties eventually reaching an agreement prior to the season beginning?
Well, you know, in all honesty, I should speak that I don't speak for the NHLPA. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to do. You know, as an independent person, I would say I don't have a real sense of negotiations yet because they haven't started. I would say that both sides have very experienced labor guys. Commissioner Bettman's been through it in the NBA and the NHL several times. Don Fear's been going through labor negotiations since you guys were watching hockey from your cribs. And so, you know, there's really no sense of whatever happens will be surprising, will be twists and turns. These people really know how to do it. And so if there is a delay of any sort in the season or the play, I would say it would be part of a strategy and part of a very experienced process, and not like last time when everyone was wondering what was happening.
Tom, one of the other issues that was sort of got a lot of play earlier in the year was the realignment debate, and then it turned into the realignment debacle. You know,
right.
How badly did the NHL handle that? And you know, from a general manager's perspective, you know, what is the GM? Is the GM just at the mercy of everything else that's going on there, and they just sort of play the cards as they're dealt?
Yeah, that's a good question. Realignment was pushed for years, since we came into the league, when I first did the Wild's charter schedule and realized we were in the air more than any other team, and our closest rival was 1,480 miles away in the division there in Vancouver.
Yeah.
I'd go to league meetings and say, look, Boston, how would you like to be in a division with Dublin, Ireland? You know, that's kind of what we're facing here. We should get more geographically smart. No one listened for a long time, and then finally, you know, the TV gods aligned and everything else so that it looked good for the league. Your question, though, was how badly did the league handle it? I don't know what the league's goals were. The league wanted this to get done. They could have made it happen, you know, clearly. They presented to the PA and said, here's the deal. You have X amount of time to ask questions. The PA started to ask questions. The league said, all right, you have till Friday. And before the PA could really digest it and analyze it, the league said, well, deal's off.
Well,
and that was it.
Let me ask you from a general manager's perspective then, how does the GM sort of garner support amongst their colleagues for a change of that nature? You said, you know, the Wild had the closest rival was 1,400 kilometers away. You know, how,
miles, actually.
Miles, sorry.
That'd be like 20,000.
Right. 1,400 miles away. So, I mean, how does a GM in that role get his brethren on side to make that an easier schedule almost?
You know, to be honest, it's not really a GM issue. It sounds like it, you know, travel and the rest, but this is a TV and attendance issue. The league and the owners want teams to play in their own time zone as often as possible. So when you're on TV, you're not at 10:30 at night, say,
sure,
in your own market, or 4:30 in the afternoon in your own market. So it was really an ownership and governor-driven process rather than GMs. The GMs that are powerful and play both roles, like a Lou Lamoriello or Brian Burke, would curry favor with others. But, you know, the TV people are very close to the league. They're just doing a new deal with NBC, you know, which purchased Versus, and Canada had some great national deals signed. I'm sure that was more of an impetus than any GM coming in and saying, hey, my guys aren't resting enough. That probably didn't resonate at the league office.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Tom Lynn. He's the former assistant general manager for the Minnesota Wild.
Tom, you were with the Wild for approximately 10 years in upper management. From your perspective, how did being a general manager and being in the office change over that 10-year period?
That's a great question, because I was asked it the other day, and I thought about it. When my boss, Doug Rasbrough, hired me, his idea was that I would spend half my time as a lawyer, because I came from the law firm that used to represent the league. He thought, well, you spend half your time as a lawyer and half the time doing player contracts, administration, setting up hockey ops. Because when he had left Calgary, his prior job as GM, I think in 96, 97, their entire payroll was less than $10 million, and there were a few league rules to deal with, and that was it. So I showed up for the Wild in March of 2000, and within 6 weeks, he realized that hockey ops was now exploded, that payrolls were going, you know, $58, $60 million, and what you're spending was closer to $70 million. There were thousands of rules. There was international issues. There was immigration. There was the IHF agreements. And so we quickly had to put together a staff rather than someone half-time to run hockey ops. That's how it was in 2000. Then you had the salary cap come in, a 455-page CBA, and, you know, so many more issues now that it's basically, I hate to call it a lawyer's game, but at least a law degree helps.
Mm-hmm. That's why Richard's got one.
Oh, yeah.
I heard.
Tom, we keep mentioning that you were the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild, but you're also now a player agent representing professional hockey players. What's the transition been like to go from a GM to a player agent, and talk to us a little bit about how that experience has been for you?
Yeah, it's been, you know, pretty interesting, but it was different than I expected, even knowing what I was getting into going in. And I'll tell you how. In hockey, at least most teams, there's pro scouting and there's amateur scouting. Pro scouting is a science. Amateur scouting is an art. By that I mean, in pro scouting, you have a lot of information available to you. In the U.S., or sorry, in the NHL, in North America, you'll have all these statistics, and you'll have video, and you'll be able to see a guy. The AHL keeps excellent statistics going back. The lower leagues do. So, you know, if you want to know about a pro player, you can call up how many points per game he has. You can pull up his extended plus-minus, and then you can look at everything about him. an amateur player, you know, you're scouting a kid playing in high school hockey in northern Minnesota, comparing him to a kid playing in rural Russia, comparing him to a 17-year-old playing with men in Finland, like Mikko Koivu was, and only has 4 points in 30-some-odd games. It's an art. So I was looking at that, and really I was a pro guy with the Wild. I was GM of the minor league team, and I was head of the pro scouting for a while there, and I really dealt with pro issues. So walking into high school ranks, junior ranks, Bantam ranks, and evaluating players and getting to know people, even though I know hockey and I knew how it all worked, this was my first time looking at that side of the business, and it's been a learning experience.
Tomlin, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's terrific insight you've been able to provide to our listeners.
I enjoyed it.
Well, thanks. We'll have to do it again real soon then, Tom.
All right, take care.
Take care very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Tom Lynn, former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild, joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. You're listening to IC Hockey on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. A big thank you to Tom Lynn for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment is brought to you by the good people at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. And we're going to go one step further. Callers number one and callers number five to 780-1290. You're going to win four tickets to Tuesday night's performance at Rumors. That's callers number one and callers number five at 780-1290. You're going to win four tickets to the Tuesday night performance at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Can Richie and I win the tickets?
No, you cannot.
Ezzy, put yourself on away, man.
Drew, I've been asking you for Rumors tickets for 10 years now.
You know, as you were trying to go for a specific type of clientele, and I just don't think you fit the bill.
All right.
You know,
he doesn't have any bills, is that why?
Mainly because he doesn't have any, you know, method of payment to pay for any of his food or beverage.
I'm also uncouth.
He's definitely uncouth. That I would agree with. He's 100%. That's the smartest thing you've said all show, is that you're uncouth. Let's look at the Western Conference playoff race, because that's also getting to the nitty-gritty, and it's very close down there at the bottom of the race. You have five teams battling for the last two spots, really, if you look at it. Right now, Phoenix and Colorado both have 81 points and occupy the 7th and 8th spot.
Last week, I picked San Jose and LA to get the last two spots. I'm not going to suddenly go changing my picks. Nope. But
I didn't expect you were going to change anything.
But it's interesting to look at a team like Calgary, who has a huge win against Phoenix and a huge win before that against San Jose. And San Jose, you watch play, and I think they're going to make it still because they're talent-wise. And they're not like a disarray like a team like Washington, but can you have a little more passion in your game?
Well, you watched that Calgary-San Jose game this week.
And I watched, it's
worth noting,
San Jose, Edmonton.
It's worth noting that of the five teams, Phoenix, Colorado, San Jose, Los Angeles, and Calgary battling for those final playoff spots, San Jose's played the fewest amount of games, 70 games. Yep. Colorado's played the most at 73. So San Jose's got some games in hand. LA's got a game in hand, and Calgary's right there with a game in hand only on Colorado.
True. Colorado's, they've done a nice job here to get into the eighth spot, but you mentioned the games in hand, and to me, that's the key. I mean, they're going to run out of games in hand. San Jose is only 1 point behind, but those three games in hand are huge.
Let's talk about San Jose, Richie. You said
a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush.
Very true. You're talking about passion, and you say that San Jose's not, are they playing the completely passionless hockey?
I think what, Drew, part of that is they've always performed so well in the regular season that they've kind of tried to focus more on the playoffs. The problem is, in this day and age in the National Hockey League, you do that for only so long, and then you're out of the playoffs because there's so much parity. I think that's part of the reason. I think part of the other reason is just they're a very methodical group. They don't have a lot of vocal leaders. Aside from a guy like Ryan Clough, even a guy like Dominic Moore, not the big... like your Thornton and your Marlowe are quiet guys, right? Pavelski is a little more of a vocal leader. Couture is, I think, their best forward. But he's still a younger guy and, does everything he does really well, but not the most vocal guy. And it's tough to be that when you're so young. So when you're, again, you're back to the Pavelski-Clough guys. Generally, they're some of their best players in the playoffs. Brent Burns hasn't fit in as seamlessly as many thought. I thought he would look a lot better than he has. Talent-wise, again, they're there. But they should be imposing their will upon teams and handling teams like Edmonton and Calgary quite easily. And they're not. Their talent gap is there. But when you're not taking advantage of that, then what's the issue? If the talent's on the table, on the paper, McLellan's a pretty good coach. Your goaltending hasn't been great, but it's not the issue when you're losing games 3-2.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty good against the Predators, yeah. Got the first star.
I mean, you get the game there, but just as they should be performing better, and I think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they're going to be a heck of a difficult out for either Vancouver or St. Louis. But they shouldn't be in the situation right now. And I do have concerns about, again, their ability to take it up to the next level.
Richie, they've got, like I mentioned, 3 games in hand on Colorado, and there's a difference. I mean, the Jets had a lot of focus was on the fact when the Jets were still, hard to believe it, but people forget, about 2.5-3 weeks ago, the Jets were in the Southeast Division lead, albeit briefly, but Florida had those games in hand. But San Jose's games in hand and 3 games in hand, in addition, 5 of San Jose's next games are at home. So they've got Detroit tonight, which is going to be a tough game.
Yep.
And they've got Anaheim, and then they play L.A. after Anaheim back-to-back, and then they've got Boston, Phoenix, and Colorado. So obviously the San Jose-Colorado game coming up in just over a week is going to be huge, but I think San Jose, they've got a nice homestand coming up. They shouldn't be in this position. I mean, it baffles me. When I look at the most disappointing teams in the league, I think of San Jose and I think of Washington. And as far as I'm concerned, San Jose's drop is even more surprising because of the fact that they're another team that, you know, this is a group that they've only got, you know, a few years to be a contender. And
their years are running out.
Thornton, Marlowe, they're not getting any younger. Now, I mean, guys like Kucherov can hop over and those guys can play secondary roles, but then you're paying them big money to play secondary roles, so that's the issue. And their system is poor right now. They've traded a bunch of guys to get guys. You know, and one thing we should note, guys, Marty Havlat back is a huge addition.
Yep.
And maybe that's the boost that they need. And he's always been a very good, to me, clutch performer, played really well in the Olympics and in the playoffs and such for the majority of his career. I think that his return will be of great significance. But if they don't perform, you know, with him back in the lineup for a few games and they're still struggling, you have to wonder, I mean, is it just fool me once, shame on... what is it? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me 10 times, shame on me. I mean, that's what they're doing. Every year, they fool somebody.
Right.
Every year, some big expert picks them to win the cup.
I believe it was it Elliot Friedman at the beginning of the year we had on?
Yeah.
Who said, you know, you guys are going to laugh because every year I pick it, but every year...
I'm pretty sure he changed the next week.
Well, that's okay. You know, you hedge your bets. That's what smart gamblers do.
But Drew,
you look at last night, and Calgary went into Edmonton last night. Edmonton's got nothing to play for.
Well, that's just... And Calgary has the most...
Or do regulation. They have everything to play for?
They had the most regulation win.
That's right. Calgary's got the tiebreaker in the bottom of the
Western
Conference.
So they win yesterday. They're in seventh spot with the tiebreaker.
The only team that's close... Calgary's got 31 regulation wins. Phoenix has 30. LA and Colorado each have 29. San Jose's only got 28.
But they have 3 games.
They have 3 games in hand. So if they win, if they sweep
or
those
2.
Three, yeah.
Back to Colorado and San Jose, though, Drew. Is there any other trade that's looking worse than Jamie McGinn?
I know.
Well, I mean,
TJ Gagliardi, he's got 9 points in 9 games.
He's been unbelievable.
With Colorado.
He's been unbelievable.
Colorado's been fun to watch, and they're an exciting young team. And, you know, good on them for battling really hard. I have to say, regardless of what happens, you have to say, if you're Colorado, you've had a progressive season, you move forward. Phoenix is a middling team that's done a really good job with what they have. They're extremely boring.
It's the same thing. If Phoenix sneaks in, they're going to be out in 4 games.
Yeah, exactly. They're out 4, 5, 6 games maximum. But, you know, that's Phoenix. But the L.A. and Calgary is a middling team, too, who's just playing really hard for Brent Sutter. The L.A. and San Jose, which I think the two teams will make it, I think those two teams also present the most issues for the first and second seeds. Imagine being St. Louis.
They're the most talented of the two teams. Of the five, of the 5 teams that are left
the
there,
talented.
It's L.A. and
that's
San Jose for most talent.
That's why I picked them. And St. Louis, as you have St. Louis at the first seed right now, okay? And they're locked in. St. Louis is going to be first seed.
Well, and it's not even close anymore.
Vancouver might take first seed, but
well,
St. Louis
went
won't
on a,
be,
no, Detroit went on a losing streak.
St. Louis is 6 points up on Vancouver for the number one
and
overall
the
seed,
too.
And they have 6 more regulation wins than Vancouver. They have the first seed.
But imagine being St. Louis
and getting San Jose in the first round.
San Jose in the first round, you're not great on the road.
Yeah.
You know, that value of the Brian Elliott play is out the window because you don't play 2 goalies in the playoffs. You play... In any game, you play 1 goalie, so that edge over the course of the season is removed.
Right.
You get into the matchup game, and you think to yourself, well, I mean, who knows?
If there's one team, I mean, look, any of the teams at the top of the Western Conference are hoping and praying that it's Phoenix and Colorado or Calgary that get those last spots. They don't want to see a San Jose or an L.A. in there.
Hold on, Drew, what's going on? Is this a flashback from 12 years ago with Ottawa in second place in the East and St. Louis first place? Are you going to next tell me Chris Pronger's playing for the Blues and... And Radek Bonk is playing for the Senators?
I mean, look, you look at the, I mean, you look, you know, let's go to break and then we'll come back and I want to talk about the top of the Eastern Conference there because I think there's some interesting things at play. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.